Okay, thanks for organizers for organizing this amazing conference. I've been having a lot of fun. So I'm gonna tell you about this recent work that I did with John. And for a little background, I think for this audience, I don't need to explain the importance of quantum error correction has played in our modern understanding of holography. There was this pioneering work by Almeri, Dong, and Harlow who proposed to interpret ADS-CFT as a quantum error correcting code. And since then, there has been a lot of very interesting works in this direction. I've only sampled a small subset of those here. And recently, there was yet another very interesting development called non-isometric code by Akers, Engelhardt, Parlow, Pennington, and Vardan. And this is what I want to talk about today. So a little summary is that when this first came out, we thought the proposal was very interesting, but also very radical. So we thought we need to put this to some serious tests, and that's what I want to talk about. So this code is about a map that maps two different physical pictures. One is what they call as the effective picture. I think of it as an effective Hilbert space from the point of view of someone who falls into the black hole eventually. So look at this Penrose diagram and consider this nice slice. And in the interior of the black hole, you have left and right moving modes. And in the exterior, you have some external Hawking radiation. And I can schematically represent the Hilbert space in terms of this tensor network diagram. So you have this left moving mode, right moving mode, which is entangled with the external radiation. And there are some extra quantum field degrees of freedom, which will not play an important role in this talk. And from the perspective of someone who is outside of the black hole, who doesn't fall in, he or she sees a black hole, which I'm going to call it as B. And again, there is a Hawking radiation, which I'll again call as R. And from the perspective of someone who remains outside, what this person sees is a formation and evaporation of black hole, which is presumably described by some unitary process. So I'm just going to call it as U. So this is initial state, and after you apply U, you get a black hole and the radiation. And the question is, how do you map, how do you go from one side to the other? And what the non-isometric code achieves is a map from the left-hand side, the effective picture, to the right-hand side, which is the fundamental picture. And I should note that what I'm explaining here is a little bit of simplification, but I think I'm keeping the essence of their construction. So there's this map they call as holographic map, which consists of two components. One is some unitary process, and another is something that looks like a measurement, except it's not quite a normal measurement. It's like you're performing some measurement in some basis that contains this maximally entangled state, and you're like post-selecting on this particular measurement outcome. So you get to choose what you end up measuring. So to be clear, this is not actually physically happening. All they're like saying is that in order to go from this left-hand side to the right-hand side, there is a map, and this is the map. And it's not too difficult to see, if you just stare at this diagram, that this is just mathematically exactly equal to that. So this proposal has a couple of very interesting properties. First of all, it has finite black hole entropy. It's a toy model, so it's a bit simplistic, but still you have a reasonable notion of effective field theory in the interior and the exterior that's consistent with our expectation. And it's if you look at this, well, clearly U is unitary by construction, so that's good. And what's a bit non-trivial is that this map is, even though it's not unitary, this holographic map, it almost preserves the inner product between two states for physical states. And this is kind of very interesting because if you look at this, the output can be much smaller than the input, especially when the black hole is nearly evaporated. Whenever you have a linear map which has a smaller output than the input, you just can't hope to like preserve all the inner products. But what they were able to show was that if you choose U to be an instance of a hard random unitary, then with high probability, if you just pick, let's say, like a low complexity states here, the inner product is nearly preserved up to an error which is, let's say, super polynomially small in the entropy of the black hole. So that's very cool. And in this talk, I want to focus on two features of this model. The first interesting feature is that this map involves a post-selection, as I said before. So for those of you who are not familiar with this, the rule is super simple. let's say I have an arbitrary state psi ab. The rule for the post selection is that I apply this like bra over some fixed vector phi b. Okay. After that, you will get some, in general, unnormalized state, and maybe you want to normalize it or not. Whatever case you choose, this is called as post selection. And this is not the first time that post selection has been considered. There was a famous like black hole final state proposed by Horwitz and Maldacena, and there are many investigations in this direction. But what is important is that post selection, if you don't use it carefully, it can lead to some very bizarre phenomena. So for example, what you can do is to solve NP-complete problems in polynomial time, which doesn't seem like a very reasonable thing. So let's say I have some like unitary that computes some classical function, f of x. And it has only one element for which f of x is 1, and the other elements all gives you 0. Okay? You can certainly implement such a function on a quantum computer. And if we can only compute this function on a classical or a quantum computer, if you want to find this x which satisfies f of x equals to 1, you basically have no choice but to have an exponential time algorithm. Classically, you just have to go through all possibilities. Finally, you can use Grover's algorithm, but still, it just gives you a merely better exponential. It's a still exponential time algorithm. But if you can do post-selection, you can just apply this unitary to this like uniform superposition state and just post-select on observing like a 1 here. This is kind of like a version, of, like the newspaper version of how quantum computing works, which you all know is not quite right, but yeah, you try all possibilities and pick the right answer. So yeah, maybe you believe that's possible, but I think it's kind of an unreasonable thing. If your theory allows you to do things like this, I think that's kind of an unreasonable thing. And another thing about post-selection is that even if you're not like actually actively applying it, let's say post-selection exists as some map from one theory to the other, a unitary map can be mapped into a non-unitary map. So here is a toy version of that. So let's say I have some qubit, call it as I. I have some like entangled states here. I apply some two-qubit gates. And let's say I have a theory. This is my, before I apply this post-selection, I have this theory in the vector picture. And after the post-selection, I get some theory in the fundamental picture. And you can see that this normal two-qubit unitary gets mapped into something that's a little funky. So this is still a linear map, but in general, this is not a unitary map. So the inner product between two states may not be preserved. So that's one thing that I want you to keep in mind. Another thing that I want to keep in mind is about the choice of the unitary here. Okay. So again, this was your holographic map, and the U here is exactly equal to the U there, which is supposed to be a unitary that describes the formation and the evaporation of the black hole. So what they show was that if you choose U to be an instance of a Hart-Rendon unitary, then with high probability, the inner product between two any two low complexity states are approximately preserved. That's very cool, but it's important to remember that U chosen randomly from the Hart measure in general has an exponential complexity with very, very high probability. But the U that's supposed to model this, that's supposed to be there in this model, is supposed to be the model of formation and evaporation of black hole, which is likely a polynomial time physical process. So there's a bit of a mismatch between the two here. So that's what I want to focus on. So what we wanted to do in this work is to incorporate these like more realistic features into this model and see whether the model still produces sensible results. So obviously, we'll need to modify the model a little bit because, we want to make some changes so that we can incorporate these features. And the main changes that we made were the following. So in the original model, we had the left and the right moving mode and the external radiation, some quantum field degrees of freedom. And we wanted to introduce an infaller, which has which can interact with the radiation outside and also in the inside once it falls in. And the reason for this is that in this information paradox business, if you have an entity that only exclusively interacts with the radiation or only exclusively interacts with the interior modes, then usually you can get around paradoxes very easily. But things become sort of non-trivial once you start to introduce entities that can interact with the things that are outside and then falls into the black hole and interacts with the things that are inside. A famous example of this is the Farrell paradox. So that's the setup. And the holographic map, this part is potentially debatable, but at least when the size of the enfolder is something very small compared to the black hole, we thought we shouldn't really try to change the map like in a very significant way. So we just use the same holographic map. The unitary will not be exactly the same as before because now the black hole evaporation includes this enfolder as well. So that's why we call it SU prime. But it's still something that has to map into like the U prime that you see in the outside. So the issue is that once you apply the same holographic map, and let's say the enfolder can apply this any like a V unitary V and U, you get a diagram like this. And surely when this V and U are identities, this is like manifestly unitary. But when they're not, it's unclear no matter how you choose V and U, it's unclear whether you can always make this unitary. Okay? So that's the first question. Is unitary preserved no matter how you choose V or U, V and U? And the second question is, let's suppose it is unitary, then I think from the outside perspective, you should expect this process to be not only unitary, but unitary which is like polynomially complex. Now, why is that? So let's say I have a friend who falls into the black hole, okay? And that friend is gonna apply this operation U and V. So as soon as me and my friend separates, I can view my friend and the black hole together as some like quantum mechanical system. I know what my friend is gonna do. He told me that he's gonna apply U and V. But as a joint, like a closed quantum mechanical system, I think their time evolution should be described by some unitary for like a reasonable amount of time. So I think this has to really map into a process that is like at most polynomially complex. So long story short, it turns out that the answers to these questions are both yes. And I'm going to argue that, assuming that U prime is not quite R-random, but pseudo-random. So what do I mean by pseudorandom unitaries? So roughly speaking, think of it as an ensemble of unitaries which are computationally indistinguishable from R-random unitaries. So for those of you who know the notion of pseudorandom quantum states, think of it as a process version. So pseudorandom states are states that are not exactly R-random, but like computationally hard to distinguish from R-random states. Think of it as a unitary analog of that. And for those of you who don't know about this, I want you to think about these two different thought experiments and compare them. Thought experiment one, you pick a random unitary from this ensemble that you have, and then you run some circuit. So you get to choose your circuit. You have some. You can use UKs as many times as possible, as long as it's polynomial amount. And you get to choose like any circuit elements that that lies in between these U's, okay? And then you measure in some simple basis. So for example, let's say you measure a single qubit in the Z basis. So that's the experiment that you're gonna do. And then you average over this K. So that's thought experiment one. And I wanna compare that to a version in which you basically replace this UK by a truly R-random unitary. So now I pick a R-random unitary, run the exact same circuit, but just replace UK by U, okay? And you measure in the simple basis, the same measurement as before, and then you average over the hard measure. Okay? And if the measurement statistics are like nearly indistinguishable, like exponentially small, and if all of these UKs can be like efficiently implemented, then we say this is like a pseudorandom unitary family. So because this is a confusing concept, I just want to make sure everybody really understand this. So whenever I talk about pseudorandom unitary, like a typical response that I get is that, oh, maybe like you're saying something like this. So let's say I have some unitary, which condition on this first register, I apply a unitary like UK, okay? Then you can apply a uniform mixture of these unitaries by like preparing superposition state, uniform superposition state, applying this U pseudo, and then just tracing out this guy, okay? And you might think that pseudorandom unitaries are basically requiring the left-hand side being like very close to the right-hand side. I want to emphasize that that's not quite the case. I mean, like if you do it, that's good, but that's not really necessary for the for unitaries to be pseudorandom. All I'm saying is that suppose instead of having these like open legs in the tensor network diagram, suppose I close all the legs. by introducing the initial state and possibly some like a decoding unitary like W, followed by some measurement. Okay, what I'm saying is that if you have a circuit diagram like this and you replace that by a harm random unitary, the left-hand side and the right-hand side, their statistics is like nearly indistinguishable, as long as all these things are merely just polynomially complex. So it could be that even though for polynomially complex, like phi, w, and measurement, that they are very close, if you choose a like exponentially complex phi, w, and measurement, it could be that they could be like very, very different. So if you accept that pseudorandom unitaries exist, which is actually kind of a big if, but if you believe that, then you can, it's not too hard to convince you that by simply changing this setup, well, in the previous slide, we have some like abstract subsystems, but now let's go back to our original setup. So we have a black hole evaporating. And let's say from the point of view of someone who's outside, black hole is something that we don't have a direct access to unless we dive in. So if we trace out the black hole, it's conceivable that there certainly exists unitary such that when you trace out the black hole, this is like computationally indistinguishable from the right-hand side, no matter how you choose W, phi, and measurement, as long as they're all polynomially complex. So this is the central hypothesis of our work. So we can debate about whether it's a reasonable one or not, but that's our starting point. At least the upshot is that we have some reasons to believe that there are polynomially complex unitaries for which the condition that I stated here can be satisfied. Good. So assuming that's true, now let's revisit the issues. Let me remind you that the issue was whether this process is unitary, and also if it is unitary, whether it is like nearly polynomially complex. And again, if you just stare at this, it's not totally clear if this is unitary. But here's an interesting fact. A similar fact was pointed out by this Akers et al. Paper, which is that if you just average over this over hard random unitaries, what you get is just identity. So, and you can also calculate the fluctuation, which is exponentially small, but that's not too important. The important thing is this average is like this. What this is saying is that on average, this process is unitary, no matter how you choose V and U. So. Your instinct would be to simply declare that, oh, I said that U prime are like pseudorandom unitaries. So I can replace, whenever I see these like U primes, I can replace that by just like iterating over these like hard random unitaries. So that's the right idea, but there's something like illegal going on. The problem is that, first of all, we haven't really specified this in terms of like so putting in some like low complexity states, applying a unitary low complexity operation followed by measurement. It's some like tensor network diagram, and most importantly, these red and blue things, they were certainly constructed from unitaries, but as it is written, they're not quite unitaries. There are some linear operations that does some funky thing on your state. So to actually invoke the pseudorandomness assumption, we need to rewire this in a way that allows us to use the pseudorandomness assumption. And the original application of the holographic map looks like exactly what we want. So we let's say I didn't put the state here, but let's say I put in a low complexity state here. In the bottom, I'm starting with some states. These are all unitary operations, and this you can think of it as like a measurement in this like entangled basis. So everything looks like pretty normal, but the issue is that the post selection that you're doing on can be a huge system. Like let's say remember this R is the radiation. So if we are way past the page time, the subsystem that you're post selecting on can be like a much larger than the remaining black hole. And that turns out to be an issue because this actually blows up the norm in the error by the factor of R, which can be like a huge. The correct way to do this is to note the following identity. So I'm going to pause a little bit for you to convince yourself that the left-hand side is like really equal to the right-hand side. And the important thing here is that the important difference between the left-hand side and the right-hand side is this. On the left-hand side, you are doing a post-selection on a huge, potentially huge system. Remember, R was a potentially huge system, path to page time. On the right-hand side, the thing that you're post-selecting on is a smaller thing. So I was representing the infaller. So as long as the infaller is small, certainly infaller should be smaller than the size of the remaining black hole. So this is a system which is like significantly smaller than R. So that turns out to be okay. So once you rewire everything so that it actually looks like the rule that is imposed by the pseudorandomness assumption, you get something like this. So you have put in some low complexity, say psi and phi, and you apply some unitary, and then you just measure in this basis. And this is just a normal circuit followed by measurement. So you can just replace this U by an average over this like hard random unitaries. So in the end, when the dust settles, you get an approximate unitarity up to an error, which is bounded by the dimension of the infaller times some something that decays exponentially with the number of qubits in the remaining black hole. Okay, so the slogan is that the pseudorandomness of U prime guarantees approximate unitarity, no matter how you choose U and V. Okay, so then the next question is the complexity. So suppose you believe that all the calculations that we did are correct, and suppose everything is unitary. Now, is this process actually only polynomially complex or exponentially complex? And again, the issue is that if we throw a robot or my friend into the black hole who's gonna do this like unitaries U and V, I can view this robot or friend plus the black hole as a closed quantum mechanical system evolving unitarily, and therefore, for a reasonable amount of time, and therefore we should expect the overall complexity shouldn't be so large. So probably this process shouldn't be exponentially complex, but again, it's not totally clear why this should be merely polynomially complex because of this post-selection part. And more generally, Scott Aronson showed a long time ago that if you generally have post-selection plus like a bounded polynomial time quantum computation, you can, that's actually equal to a class called PP, which certainly includes the class NP. And the claim is that the complexity of this map is bounded to be at most like the dimension of the infaller times C, where C is the complexity of this like U prime, V, U, like, and this psi naught F. So as long as those things are like polynomially complex, and as long as the size of the infaller is like reasonably small, the complexity doesn't blow up too much. The basic idea is that in quantum computing, there's this like big hammer known as amplitude amplification. And in recent days, people have came up with a like even bigger hammer called quantum singular value transformation. And basically, anytime you want, you're in a situation where you have some like target state that you want to like amplify, you can use these tools to amplify to like almost unit probability. So the key quantity that determines the complexity of these algorithms is really the overlap between the state that you want to prepare and the state that you actually prepare. So in this case, it'll be square root of p, and the overall complexity is like order like 1 over square root of p. In our case, it's a slightly different context, but I would say it's a slight generalization of like amplitude amplification. So one can check by doing some calculation that the post-selection probability is like order 1 over dimension of infaller square. So the overhead ends up being like order the dimension of the infaller. So that's the basic idea. So what are the takeaways? I think the most important one is that this holographic map, which in its original form was assumed to be like an instance of a hard random unitary, can be, we don't need that. I think merely assuming that it's like pseudo-random basically gives you all the features. And for the small infaller, the complexity does not blow up too much. So what I find a little bit amazing is that the post, like, usually I just almost never think about post-selection because it leads to so many problems, but at least in this model, it doesn't seem to any like very serious issues for now. That said, there are still some like very fine-grained questions that I want to raise. First is a rule. So we apply the holographic map in its original form without pretty much any modification. And is this okay? Well, we think it's okay because the result that we got was kind of reasonable. So we got a deviation from exact unitarity, but that deviation was just exponentially small in the size of the remaining black hole. So I think it's conceivable that once, you know, we account for this mysterious quantum gravity effects, maybe the exact unitarity can be restored. That said, there is this entirely different proposal by DeWolf and Higginbotham recently, which proposed to do this like backward-forward move, which just preserves like unitarity exactly. Which is the correct one? I don't know. And the second issue is that even though the complexity doesn't blow up significantly, it still blows up a little bit. So if we throw in 1,000 qubits interacting both with the external radiation and the modes in the interior, the bound that we currently have only says that the complexity at most, the original complexity times exponential of 1,000, which sounds like a very huge number. So can we do better? There's a little bit of tension here because if we just use the approach that we've taken, just viewing U prime as a black box without invoking any structure, I'm pretty sure like our bound is like essentially optimal. Maybe you can get like polynomial speed up or something, but I don't think you can get anything like just polynomial overhead in the number of qubits in the enfolder. And so how to do that is not obvious at all. And since I'm at the If From Qubit workshop, I wanted to advertise this one question. So in the quantum complexity theory land, people are thinking a lot about whether how to construct pseudorandom unitaries. And there's one problem which, if you can do, will make huge progress here. And that's the following question. So let's say you apply random phases in two complementary phases and repeat this like L times, okay? And your task is to quantify the closeness of this ensemble to the truly hard random ensemble. This seems very simple, but surprisingly not obvious. Okay, and with that, thanks for listening.
Yummy.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I have a very basic question. So, the post selection in the model is only applied to the friend who jumped in. You said there's only a little bit of post selection. It's only.
Right. So right. So effectively, yes. So the definition is well. Let me just go there. Yeah, so the original holographic map is on the left-hand side. It's just so happens that mathematically it's equal to the right-hand side, which looks like I'm post-selecting on my friend.
I guess I'm just curious what identifies the friend part that gets post-selected from the point of view of the black hole, or is it that really there's effectively, there's a post-selection occurring on everything.
Well, I view the post-selection as just some map from one side to the other. So I don't think So at least for me, I don't think the post-selection is actually applying to the friend. Although, like mathematically, it ends up being exactly like that. Because, like, if you look at this friend over here, he's just doing some unitary operations. If you just remove this part, you have some reasonable story in the effective picture. And then the question is, if you map that into fundamental picture, how does that picture look like? And all we're saying is that in the fundamental picture, we get something on the right-hand side, mathematically speaking.
Right, but in the effective picture, there was post-selection.
No, it's more like in the effective picture. So, in the effective picture, you have to remove this like post selection. And the question is, what happens in the effective picture? You want to map into the fundamental picture. How do you do that? You apply this post selection.
Thanks.
Hi. Thanks for a very nice talk.
I'm just curious, is there any relations between your pseudo random unitary and K design unitary? Because it seems your motivation is the low polynomial complexity, right. And it seems the K design already has a lower complexity.
Right.
And for the original non-assumptive paper, I think two designs is enough typical.
Good question. So the issue with the K designs is that you need lots of entropies. And so remember, the situation that we want to be in is that the part that you trace out is the remaining black hole. And in particular, we want to focus on the page, the regime in which the remaining black hole is much smaller than the radiation that has been emitted already, because that's the challenging regime. And in that case, you can show that you simply don't have enough random bits to actually generate two designs. So that's why we need this in this particular example.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, so I was wondering if you think it's possible that the complexity you found is actually correct in the sense that maybe because of maybe wormholes, maybe universes are wormholes or some other restriction, we actually never can know it well enough to do this? Or maybe more technically, like in SYK, how precisely do I need to know the coefficients to make this work?
Well, so obviously all my arguments are very hand wavy, but like if I view, let's see. Okay, so I would like to argue that this process still has to be like polynomially complex, like even in the number of qubits of the infaller, because like I think there shouldn't be a huge difference in complexity between the following two situations. So one is a situation in which the, let's say there's a shell of collapsing matter forming a black hole, and the other is a shell of collapsing matter forming a black hole, except I threw in some like robot that are programmed in a specific way. So I just find it very odd that just because I threw in a robot, you're going to have to like blow up in the complexity by like a huge amount. But yeah, I could be wrong, but yeah, it seems unreasonable to me.
I think there was a paper by Douglas and Raphael where they used the concept of consistent histories to argue that you can't assign probabilities to these post-selective black holes. Does your approach resolve this issue, or do you need like to add something like Almeri added with like the that like observing outside the black hole actually changes it or creates a new one?
I don't think I know that issue at heart, so I'm not sure if I can answer that question. But presumably, this issue, if it arises here, it arises in the original non-isometric code. So maybe the authors here can say something.
Yeah. Well, one comment I could make is that in their story, to really have a problem, you had to do something that was exponentially complicated, and we sort of just said you're not allowed to do things that are exponentially complicated, so that's a little bit, it's kind of a sneaky way out of it, but maybe a more responsible thing to say would be that there's some exponentially complicated things that you can do, and then the result is still a sub-exponential state. So for example, you can act on the Hawking radiation with the reconstruction of an interior mode that creates a particle inside the black hole. And then what we would say is that the act of doing that creates that particle. So if the state has a sub-exponential interpretation, then that's the right interpretation. So that's a rather non-linear rule. You know, in some sense, the act of doing it created it. I mean, Ahmed probably also has, do you want to say anything? He was thinking about this recently. So.
Okay, if there are no more questions, let's thank Isaac.